Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we really dig into sources, articles, research, all that good stuff. We extract the key nuggets for you.
Yeah, the goal is simple. Give you a shortcut to being genuinely informed.
Exactly. With some surprising facts, maybe a little humor to keep things interesting. And this Deep Dive is proudly brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com, guiding you through the, let's say, intricate world of advanced health solutions.
A great partner for this topic.
Definitely. Now, if you saw the thumbnail for this Deep Dive, maybe you noticed that striking image. The jacked woman, low body fat guy holding a syringe.
Hard to miss.
Right. It pulls you right into today's topic. We're diving back into peptides, specifically CJC-1295.
We've touched on it before, haven't we?
We have, yeah. But today, the mission is laser-focused. We are cracking the code on DAC. What does it mean?
And crucially, what are the differences between CJC-1295 with DBO and CJC-1295 without it?
Precisely. It's a fundamental split. Really changes how this peptide works in your body.
You've hit the nail on the head. The name CJC-1295 might ring a bell for some listeners, but these nuances, the with or without DAC, they're absolutely critical.
Especially if you're serious about understanding, you know, biological optimization.
Exactly. Or even if you're just navigating the landscape of advanced health options, or frankly, just really curious about enhancing well-being. Understand, this isn't just academic, it's practical.
So what are we doing today? Kind of like a back to basics.
In a way, yes. We're looking at what's called a gateway peptide, but we're peeling back the layers, getting past the confusion to the core mechanisms. What's really going on?
Okay, let's unpack it then. Our mission for you, the listener, is to guide you through the nuts and bolts, the mechanisms, the potential benefits, the side effects, they're going to talk about those, and the practical stuff, how these two versions actually apply.
So by the end, you should feel equipped, right? Either to make informed decisions for yourself or just, you know, satisfy that curiosity.
Couldn't have said it better. So let's start right at square one. What is CJC-1295 fundamentally? What's its role in this whole growth hormone picture?
Okay, so at its most basic level, CJC-1295 is a synthetic analog of growth hormone releasing hormone, GHRH.
Synthetic analog. So like a lab-made copy or cousin of a natural hormone.
Exactly. A carefully designed chemical cousin built for a specific job in your body. And here's the really key distinction right from the start. Its main job isn't to be growth hormone.
Okay.
It doesn't directly add GH into your system. Instead, CJC-1295 stimulates your own pituitary gland, that little master gland at the base of your brain,
right,
to naturally release its own growth hormone.
Ah, that's a huge difference. So it's not like injecting GH itself.
Precisely. And that's often seen as a more, let's say, nuanced approach. Why? Because if you just add external GH, exogenous GH, it can sometimes signal your body to slow down its own natural production over time.
Right, the negative feedback loop.
Exactly. CJC-1295, on the other hand, encourages your body to do what it's designed to do, just maybe a bit more efficiently.
That makes sense. Working with the body, not overriding it. Okay, quick side question, the name CJC. Where does that come from? It sounds like initials.
Good question. It actually points to its origins. The CJC comes from the company that first developed it, Cocoyum Biotechnologies.
Ah, okay. So it's their internal naming.
Seems like it, yeah. They had a habit of referencing their company name in their compound codes. So CJC-1295 tells you who made it.
Got it. So Cocoyum makes this peptide. It stimulates the pituitary. What happens next? Does it just stop there?
Oh, no, not at all. That stimulation kicks off a whole cascade of effects. It's not just a local thing at the pituitary. It ripples through your system.
Okay, so the pituitary releases its natural GH. What are these ripple effects? What does that GH actually do once it's released?
Well, the immediate next step, and a key player in many of GH's effects, is a rise in your circulating levels of IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1.
IGF-1, heard of that. Also important for growth, right?
Very important. It's a potent anabolic hormone, promotes growth, building tissues. So together, this boost in both GH and IGF-1 supports a really wide range of crucial body processes.
Like what specifically?
We're talking things like protein synthesis, absolutely vital for repairing and building tissues, muscle, skin, organs. You name it.
Okay.
It also significantly helps with fat metabolism, helping your body tap into fat stores for energy more effectively instead of just relying on carbs.
So better muscle building, better fat burning.
And that directly translates into things like enhanced lean muscle growth, improved cellular regeneration, faster repair processes all over the body.
Sounds like a master key almost.
Yeah.
Unlocking repair, growth, metabolism.
All right.
optimizing things.
That's a good way to put it, leveraging your body's own capabilities.
Yeah.
And the list goes on, speeding up recovery after workouts, which is huge for athletes or even just active people.
Yeah, recovery is key.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Then there's the cellular regeneration aspect, often linked to anti-aging effects. People report things like better skin elasticity, healthier hair and nails, just feeling more vital.
Hmm.
It helps with joint repair too, easing soreness, helping heal injuries. And while maybe not as dramatic as testosterone for bones, it does contribute positively to bone density.
Important for long-term health.
Critical.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the most immediate things people notice, better sleep quality. Significantly mm-hmm. better. Optimized GH pulses really help there.
And good sleep impacts everything else.
Everything. Mood, focus, overall well-being. So, yeah, it's fascinating how CJC 1295 works with your body. But this raises that central question again. How does this natural pulsatile rhythm, these bursts of GH, relate to the different forms, especially when we throw this D-Day thing into the mix?
Right. Perfect segue. Let's decode DAC. We know CJC 1295 triggers natural GH, but then there's CJC 1295 with DA changes the game entirely. So for us non-pharma engineers, what is DAC?
Okay. DA stands for drug affinity complex. It's basically a piece of pharmaceutical technology. And interestingly, like CJC itself, it was also pioneered by Kokam Biotechnologies.
Ah, the same company again.
The very same. And its purpose is really singular, quite ingenious, actually.
Right.
It's designed to drastically extend the peptide's half-life in your body.
Half-life, meaning how long it stays active.
Exactly. How long it takes for half of it to be cleared. And DAC extends that a lot. It's not a small adjustment. It fundamentally changes how often you dose it and how long the effects linger.
Okay, so it makes the peptide last way longer. But how? What's happening at the molecular level? Is it just a bigger molecule or?
It's actually a really clever trick using your body's own systems. The DCHK tech involves chemically linking the CJC 1295 peptide to a, let's call it a reactive chemical group.
Okay.
This isn't just mixing them together. It's designed for a specific reaction after injection inside your bloodstream.
So what happens once it's in the blood?
Once it's circulating, this reactive group does something called conjugation, fancy word, but it basically means it forms a stable chemical bond, attaches the peptide to albumin.
Albumin, right, I know that one. Super common protein in blood, acts like a taxi service, right?
Perfect analogy. Albumin is a workhorse protein in your plasma. It carries all sorts of things, hormones, fatty acids, drugs, you name it. But here's the kicker. Albumin itself sticks around for a long time.
How long are we talking?
Its half-life in humans is typically somewhere between 12 and 19 days. It's very stable.
Wow. Okay. So if you attach the CJC peptide to this long-lasting albumin?
The peptide essentially hitches a ride. It's bound to this carrier that circulates for weeks like a tiny passenger on a really long-haul flight.
So that's the secret. The peptide stays active because the albumin it's stuck to stays active.
Precisely. And that's why CJC 1295 with DAC has such a remarkably long half-life. We're talking roughly 6 to 8 days.
Days. Compared to what for the non-DC version? We'll get to that, but it sounds like a massive difference.
Huge difference. Minutes versus days. And the practical result of that 60-day half-life, it means it takes about a week for just half of the dose to leave your system.
Which allows for
a sustained release. Instead of a short burst, you get a continuous, slow release of the peptide, which leads to a much steadier, more constant elevation of growth hormone levels.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. That little DS changes everything from minutes of action to days. It completely flips the script on how you'd approach GH stimulation. But what does that mean for the body's response? That difference between minutes and days, especially thinking about the body's natural GH rhythm.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it leads us straight into understanding CJC 1295 without DAC. Which, by the way, is also commonly known as MOD-GRF-129.
MOD-GRF-129. Right. Heard that name, too. Same thing as CJC without DA?
Essentially, yes. And this version is designed specifically to mimic your body's natural growth hormone pulses.
Pulses?
Yeah.
Like the short bursts you mentioned?
Exactly. Think short and sharp bursts. These happen naturally throughout the day and night, kind of aligning with your circadian rhythms, maybe every 3 hours or so.
Hmm?
MOD-GRF aims to enhance those natural pulses.
Okay, so if DATAC is the steady stream, no day is about riding the natural waves, those quick bursts. How does it do that at the cellular level? How does it trigger just a short pulse?
When you administer CJC without DAC, or MOD-GRF, it travels to the pituitary and binds to very specific receptors, the GHRH receptors.
Okay.
These are located on the surface of specific cells in the anterior pituitary called somatotropic cells. Think of them as the GH factories.
Got it. Factories with specific docking ports for the peptide.
Pretty much. And when it binds, it activates an internal communication system, a signal transduction pathway, specifically a G-protein coupled receptor pathway, or GPCR.
GPCR sounds complex, like a domino effect inside the cell.
That's a great way to visualize it. The peptide binding is like ringing the doorbell on the factory. The GPCR pathway is the immediate internal wiring. This leads to an increase inside the cell of something called cyclic AMP.
Cyclic AMP, a messenger molecule?
A key second messenger, yeah. It relays the signal from the doorbell deeper inside. This rise in cyclic AMP then flips on another switch, an enzyme called protein kinase A, or PKA.
Okay, more switches.
And PKA's job is to activate transcription factors. These are like the genetic dimmer switches. They turn up the GH1 gene, the gene that holds the instructions for making growth hormone.
Wow. So peptide binds, triggers internal signals, activates gene, makes GH.
Leading to the synthesis and then the secretion of a burst of growth hormone. But because the peptide itself, the MOD-GRF, doesn't stick around long.
Right, short half-life.
This whole process results in a brief, intense burst of GH, mimicking the natural pulse, and then it quickly quiets down again.
That's elegant, really tailored to a specific natural-like effect. But what about the body's own stop signals, like somatostatin? Doesn't that put the brakes on GH release?
Absolutely. Somatostatin is the natural inhibitor, the brake pedal. It's part of how the body maintains balance or homeostasis. It prevents GH from going too high.
So how does MOD-GRF deal with that? Does it just power through?
No, and this is key. It doesn't override somatostatin. It actually works best when somatostatin levels are naturally low.
Ah, so it takes advantage of the dips.
Exactly. It utilizes those natural windows when the body dials back the inhibition. It works with that ebb and flow, not against it, which makes timing the dose pretty important.
Okay, that explains why timing matters so much for this version. So what is its half-life, and what does that mean for dosing frequency?
Very short, around 30 minutes, similar to another peptide called surmorelin, if people are familiar with that one.
30 minutes. Okay, that's quick.
It is. And that's why you get those brief, intense GH pulses. Practically speaking, a typical dose is around 100 micrograms per injection.
And how often?
Given how quickly it clears, the recommendation is usually at least twice, often three times per day, to really capture those pulsable benefits throughout the day.
Three times a day, that's a commitment. Needs discipline. Is there a best time to take it for maximum effect?
Timing is definitely key. Best taken fasted.
Fasted. Why?
Primarily to ensure it crosses the blood-brain barrier effectively and gets to the pituitary without interference. So common times are first thing in the morning, pre-bed, or maybe timed around a workout when you're naturally in a lower insulin state.
Okay. Fasted state is crucial. And how long would someone typically run a cycle of this?
Standard cycles are often 8 to 12 weeks on, followed by a break equally important to maybe 4 to 8 or even 12 weeks off.
Why the break?
To let the body reset, maintain pituitary sensitivity, prevent receptor downregulation, keep things responsive long term.
Makes sense. Respect the body's need for breaks.
Exactly. So connecting it back, this pulsatile nature of CJC without DAC, or MOD-GRF, really aligns with the body's natural GH pattern, which leads to that critical question. Does the continuous elevation you get with the DAC version have different implications, especially for those feedback loops and long-term health?
Right. Let's pivot back to the steady stream CJC 1295 with DAC. We know the DA makes it stick to albumin, giving that continuous release, not pulsatile at all. So what does this constant sustained elevation of GH and IGF-1 mean physiologically? Are there trade-offs compared to the natural rhythm?
Well, yeah, the AC albumin binding creates that slow continuous release result. Sustained high levels of GH and IGF-1 in the blood, 2-1-4-7, essentially.
Which sounds great on paper, right? Constant growth signals.
It might seem that way initially, but there's a big physiological but. Continuous elevation just isn't how our bodies are designed to handle growth hormone. We thrive on those pulses, those peaks and valleys, for specific reasons.
So the body isn't built for a constant flood. What are the worries? What could happen with prolonged nonstop high GH?
A main concern, especially with long-term use, is potential receptor desensitization.
Meaning the pituitary receptors get less responsive.
Potentially, yes. Or it could affect the somatostatin feedback loops. If the signal is always on, the body might try to compensate by downregulating its sensitivity or its own production mechanisms. It needs those off periods to reset. Like constantly leaning on a doorbell eventually, it might start working as well.
That makes intuitive sense. The body seeks balance. Has this desensitization been studied, or is it theoretical?
There was a study back in 2006 that suggested maybe desensitization didn't happen with dye use, but and this is a huge caveat, that study had major limitations.
Like what?
Very few participants, which makes it really hard to draw firm conclusions for everyone. So you can't just point to that one study and say no desensitization. Given the basic physiology, the body's preference for pulses, caution is still warranted. Many still favor pulsatile approaches to protect long-term receptor health.
Okay, so the jury's still out on that study, and it's wise to be cautious. Given the long half-life, how does the dosing change for DICE compare to no DICE? Frequency, amount?
It's much less frequent, which is, frankly, a major draw for many people. Convenience. Typically, you're looking at 1 to 2 milligrams per week.
Per week. Big difference from 100 micrograms 3 times a day.
Massive difference.
All right.
And that weekly dose is usually split into 2 or 3 injections. So maybe 0.5 milligrams 3 times a week, something like that.
And does the timing during the day matter as much as with the no-DC?
Much less critical. Because it's working over days, hitting a specific fasted window isn't necessary for it to be effective. Its influence is sustained regardless of when you inject it that day.
Okay. And cycle duration? Still the 8-12 weeks on, 8-12 weeks off?
Generally, yes. The cycle lengths are similar. On periods followed by off periods are still recommended. However, there's a really crucial management point unique to the DAC version.
What's that?
Because GH levels are elevated for so long, potentially weeks or months if someone runs long cycles,
mm-hmm.
I think 12, 16, 20 weeks, you have to be more mindful of live insulin control, meaning monitoring and managing insulin sensitivity. Sustained high GH can, over time, potentially lead to blood sugar issues or reduced insulin sensitivity, similar to concerns with high-dose long-term exogenous GH use.
So keeping an eye on blood sugar and insulin response becomes more important with DHE.
Much more so than with the pulsable no-DALEC version, where the body gets those breaks between pulses. It's a key consideration for long-term DA use.
Okay, this paints a really clear picture. Two peptides, same basic goal, stimulate natural GH, but fundamentally different methods. Short, sharp pulses versus a long, steady stream. Now, let's talk results. What are the actual benefits you might experience, and do they feel different between the two?
Great question. While the delivery method is worlds apart, many of the core benefits stemming from that increased GH and IGF-1 are shared. Let's walk through them.
Okay, let's start with a big one, fat loss. How do they both help? And is one maybe better?
Both definitely contribute. They boost overall metabolism, help your body use fat for fuel. However, there's often a theoretical edge given to the no-DAC version, the MOD-GRF.
Wow.
The thinking is that it's natural pulsatile nature, especially if time before fasted cardio.
Right, hitting that window.
Might be better at specifically triggering the metabolic pathways needed for acute fat burning, breaking through plateaus. The DXC version also helps fat loss via that continuous metabolic boost. But it might be more of a steady background effect, maybe better for long-term maintenance than sharp cuts.
Okay. What about muscle growth and recovery? Huge drivers for people.
Absolutely. Both are strong supporters of lean muscle development and maintenance. With no DAC, those short, intense bursts, especially timed around workouts, can powerfully boost muscle protein synthesis right when you need it.
Post-workout recovery and growth.
Exactly. With DDC, the sustained high GHIGF-1 provides a constant anabolic signal throughout the week, theoretically always conducive to growth and repair. And recovery in general, both are fantastic at speeding up recovery from intense training, injuries, even surgery. Less downtime.
Vital for consistency. And anti-aging, that's a broad term, but how do they fit in?
They fit well. Both promote cellular regeneration and repair systemically. That's the foundation of anti-aging. Users often report better sleep, which is huge for regeneration.
Rejuvenational, yeah.
Plus things like better skin elasticity, healthier hair, nails, just more vitality. It's about optimizing function at a cellular level, making you function more youthfully.
Makes sense. Any other key shared benefits?
Yeah, two more worth highlighting. Joint repair both significantly help heal injuries and soothe chronic soreness. Big deal for active people or as we age.
Definitely.
And bone density. While maybe not their primary claim to fame compared to other things, they do contribute positively to bone health, important long-term. So the core GH benefits, pretty consistent across both.
But there are nuances in how they deliver those benefits, right? The sustained versus pulsatile thing must have some implications.
Absolutely. With DAC, the initial thought might be, well, sustained high levels must be better, right? Constant benefit. But as we discussed physiologically, that might not be the best long-term strategy due to potential desensitization and the body preferring pulses.
Right, the natural rhythm argument.
Exactly. Whereas with no DC, the pulsatile nature aligns perfectly with how the body expects GH. Many see this as more efficient for specific goals like fat loss or muscle support because it works with those natural cycles. potentially avoiding receptor fatigue.
So similar benefits on paper, but the delivery method impacts the body's response and maybe long-term sustainability.
Precisely. And that difference in delivery continuous versus pulsatile leads directly to different physiological responses and, crucially, different side effect profiles. That's the trade-off.
Let's talk about those trade-offs then, the side effects. Are there common ones for both? And then what are the key differences?
Yes, several side effects can pop up with either, since both raise GH. Probably the most common are injection site reactions.
Okay, what kind?
For CJC-1295 without DDAC, the mod GRF, it's pretty common to get a localized reaction. Maybe a small red ring, some hives, itching, soreness right where you injected subcutaneously, usually the belly fat. It's typically minor and fades quickly.
And with the DANCE version, same thing.
Generally, people report fewer of those immediate itchy reactions with D-Day. But some experience swelling or maybe a firm lump at the injection site. Different type of reaction might last a bit longer because the peptide is hanging around.
Okay, different injection site feels. What about systemic side effects?
Water retention is a classic GH peptide side effect. You hold a bit more water. This tends to be more noticeable and prolonged with DDC.
Why more with DD?
Simply because GH levels are elevated consistently for longer throughout the week, more time for that water retention effect to build up and stick around.
Got it. Makes sense. Anything else systemic?
Nausea or dizziness can happen with both, though usually mild and not everyone gets it. Carpal tunnel symptoms are possible.
Tingling hands, wrists.
Yeah, tingling, numbness, pain. Can happen with prolonged use or if the dose is too high. It's related to fluid retention, putting pressure on nerves. And, as we touched on, any GH peptide carries a potential risk regarding insulin sensitivity. But this risk is generally considered more pronounced, more of a concern, with CJC-DAC because of that sustained GH elevation potentially impacting glucose metabolism over time.
Right, the continuous signal versus pulses.
Exactly. Oh, and one more thing. Sometimes people mention increased prolactin. Very rare, and often, what people think are high prolactin symptoms might actually just be general water retention, especially if they're not super lean to begin with.
Interesting how things can get misattributed. Okay, now the big distinctions. How do the side effect profiles really differ cumulatively, DHC versus no DD? Where does that half-life make the biggest difference?
This is really where the choice becomes personal. The half-life dictates the cumulative experience. With CJC-DAC, because of the sustained elevation, there's generally a higher incidence or risk of developing insulin resistance over time compared to the pulsatile spikes.
The body just isn't used to that constant signal.
Right. There's also potential for cortisol issues if GH stays high for very long periods, though less common. And paradoxically, some report more potential for sleep disturbances with DD, despite GH usually helping sleep. Maybe the constant signal disrupts natural sleep cycles for some initially.
Interesting. Any other differences?
Joint and muscle pain may be related to that carpal tunnel type fluid retention, can be more persistent with DC simply because the underlying cause, elevated GH and fluid, is present for longer stretches.
And the tumor growth concern we mentioned, how does that fit in here?
Again, it's a theoretical consideration, not a high risk for most healthy people. But if someone is specifically trying to avoid any potential growth stimulation or has a relevant history, then the sustained nonstop GH elevation from DD might be seen as theoretically less ideal than the pulsatile release of no DD, which allows for those off periods. It's about minimizing potential contributing factors in sensitive individuals.
So summing it up, how do the overall side effect profiles compare?
The key is duration and accumulation. With CJC without DC, mod GRF, side effects are generally shorter-lived, milder. The compound clears quickly, so symptoms tend to resolve quickly, too.
Right.
With CJC, with DDC, you're looking at potentially prolonged cumulative side effects. Because it stays in the system for days, symptoms have time to stick around, maybe compound over time, become more noticeable.
So neither is necessarily high risk if used right, but the nature of the potential side effects is quite different.
Exactly. It's about understanding those nuances to make an informed choice that fits your tolerance and goals.
It really is that no free lunch situation, isn't it? The convenience of DT's fewer injections comes with a different set of potential physiological responses and side effects. But what if you could amplify the benefits, maybe get the best of both worlds, or at least a more powerful effect? That leads us to combining CJC-1295s without DC with another peptide, Ipamorelin.
Ah, yes, the synergistic strategy. It's a popular one, and for good reason. It really shows how understanding the biology lets you optimize things. So first, let's introduce Ipamorelin properly.
Okay, what is it?
It's a GHRP, a growth hormone-releasing peptide. but it works differently than CJC. While CJC primarily stimulates GH release directly, Ipamerlin's main job is to inhibit somatostatin.
Somatostatin. The brake pedal again. So Ipamerlin takes the brakes off.
Essentially, yes. It reduces the amount of that inhibitory signal. Remember, the body is always trying to maintain balance, using somatostatin to prevent too much GH release. Ipamerlin actively lowers that brake pressure.
So CJC hits the gas, Ipamerlin lifts the brake. Sounds like a powerful combo.
That's exactly the idea. It creates this 1+1=3 effect. CJC stimulates the release, and Ipamerlin clears the path by reducing inhibition.
Allowing CJC, no DAC, to trigger a much bigger GH pulse than it could on its own.
Precisely. You get significantly larger, more consistent, potentially more frequent GH pulses.
Mm-hmm.
Higher peaks than either could achieve alone. It lets the pituitary release more freely without being immediately clamped down by somatostatin.
That sounds incredibly efficient. How do you actually administer them? Two separate injections?
It's usually quite simple. They can also be drawn into the same syringe. Easy. In fact, you can often buy them pre-mixed in one vial as a blend, specifically designed for this purpose.
Convenient. So beyond just a bigger GH pulse, what are the main advantages of this combo?
Well, maximizing GH output without needing super high doses of either individual peptide is a big one. That potentially minimizes side effects from pushing one peptide too hard. Plus, Ipamerlin itself is known for being quite selective.
Selective, meaning?
Meaning it tends to avoid some side effects common with other GHRPs, like increased cortisol or prolactin or that intense hunger some peptides cause. So you get the amplified GH pulse with a cleaner side effect profile. Very desirable.
Powerful results, potentially fewer side effects. And it still maintains that natural pulsatile rhythm, right?
Absolutely. It enhances the natural pulse, works with the body's rhythm, minimizing the risk of pituitary shutdown. You're amplifying, not overriding. However, there's one common, almost counterintuitive side effect people report with the combo.
Oh, what's that?
Initial sleep problems.
Sleep problems? Really? I thought more GH meant better sleep.
A bit of a paradox. While Ipamerlin alone might improve sleep for some, and CJC alone might have minor effects, the combination can sometimes, especially initially, lead to more noticeable sleep impairment for certain individuals.
Why would that happen?
The speculation is that the combined effect creates such a strong, acute GH pulse. Maybe it temporarily impacts metabolism or neurochemistry in a way that disrupts sleep onset or quality for some. Like the body gets this unusually strong signal and needs time to adjust. It's fascinating, really.
Interesting. Body chemistry is complex. So if someone wants this powerful combo and is okay with maybe some initial sleep weirdness, what are the dosing considerations? CJC without DT plus Ipamerlin.
With that combo, often just one or two injections per day are enough for optimal GH release. The synergy means you might not need that third daily CJC, no DAT injection you might take if using it alone.
Streamlines things a bit. Now, what if someone tried to combine CJC with DAC and Ipamerlin? Does that work?
You could, but remember, Ipamerlin has that very short half-life. So even if you're only injecting the long-lasting CJC DAC two or three times a week, you'd still need to inject the Ipamerlin daily, maybe multiple times daily, for it to be effective. Its effect wouldn't last alongside the DT.
Right, the short-acting brake lifter needs frequent application.
Exactly. So that synergy really shines brightest with the pulsatile CJC without D-Day. It truly shows how understanding these details allows for strategic application. Which, of course, brings us back to the listener. Knowing all of this, how do you decide which path is right for you?
The million-dollar question indeed. After all this info, how do you choose? CJC with DDES or CJC without DDES? It's so clear there's no single best answer. It's all about tailoring it.
Absolutely. Tailoring it to your individual needs, your goals, your lifestyle, how you tolerate potential side effects. It's personal.
So let's break it down. Who is CJC 1295 with D-Day best suited for?
Okay. CJC with DA is likely your better bet if, number one, you strongly prefer fewer injections. That long half-life, meaning maybe just two or three shots a week, is a major convenience factor. Big plus if you hate needles or have a busy schedule.
Makes sense. Convenience is key for some.
Also, it's good if you desire those consistently elevated GH levels all week long. Maybe for sustained effects, like dealing with a significant injury where constant elevation of growth factors might be seen as beneficial, long-term repair goals.
Okay, what else?
It's also for you if you're generally okay with the potential for more noticeable water retention or maybe slightly reduced insulin sensitivity over time. Perhaps you're not aiming for peak shredded condition right now, so those are acceptable trade-offs.
Right. Less focus on fine-tuning those aspects.
And finally, if you're less concerned about perfectly mimicking the body's natural GH pattern, and you prioritize that convenience and sustained effect, then DA often makes more sense. It's a practical choice, trading some physiological nuance for ease of use.
That's a clear profile. Convenience, sustained effect for maybe chronic issues, less concern about mimicking natural poses or managing minor water retention insulin sensitivity. Now, flip side. Who should lean towards CJC 1295 without D-Day Daysman GRF 129?
CJC without DA or MOD GRS is probably best for you if your priority is to closely mimic the body's natural pulsatile GH production. If you value that more physiologically aligned natural approach, working with the body's rhythms.
Aligning with the body's design.
Exactly. It's also for you if you prefer more control and precision with your injections and you don't mind the frequency 1, 2, maybe 3 times a day because you want to time those pulses strategically around fasted states or workouts for maximum acute effect.
Control and timing are important to you.
Right. And because it clears quickly, it generally leads to potentially fewer and milder long-term or cumulative side effects. The body gets breaks between pulses. So minimizing potential long-term feedback issues or receptor desensitization is high on your list. No day is often preferred. It respects the body's need for those on-off cycles.
Okay, that's also very clear. Mimicking natural rhythm, precise timing control, potentially fewer cumulative side effects, and you don't mind the more frequent dosing schedule.
That sums it up well.
This really crystallizes it, that aha moment. It's not about better or worse. It's about aligning the peptide's behavior, its half-life, its release pattern, with your specific goals, your lifestyle, and how hands-on you want to be, making that informed personal choice. So as you, the listener, reflect on this, how does this shape your view of optimization?
It's fascinating, isn't it? This whole deep dive into CJC 1295 really underscores how intricately designed our bodies are and how much they often prefer these pulsatile rhythms over constant signals that ebb and flow, periods of activity, periods of rest.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme in biology.
It really is, and it makes you wonder, how might this principle, this idea of mimicking natural biological patterns, apply elsewhere in other areas of health and wellness? Could it encourage a more harmonized approach to optimization beyond just peptides?
That's a great final thought. What does this understanding of sustained versus pulsatile reveal about your body's inherent wisdom? And how could you apply that thinking elsewhere in your life? Working with your body's intelligence, not just trying to force an outcome. Food for thought.
Definitely.
All right, that wraps up this deep dive. Our conversation today, digging into CJC 1295, was proudly brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com. Until next time, stay curious.
And keep seeking those aha moments.